most out of this journey if you are part of a Connect group with us, because our Connect groups are going to follow up on our Sunday morning messages and dig a little deeper into the topics that we're going to be talking about. But this morning we are getting started on this series. So, whose kid actually ends up going into the lemonade business? You've seen them before. Maybe you did this when you were a child, or maybe your kids did this. You want to make a little extra cash in the summertime, and so you set up a stand. You know, the child sets up a stand and they make some lemonade, you know, probably with their parents' help and their parents' money and all that stuff. And they put a sign up, you know, 25 cents for a cup of lemonade. And it goes okay the first day, so they try it again the second day and try it again the third day. They're enjoying having a little bit of money flowing in, and so it gets a little bigger, and maybe after a couple summers of doing this, they have an opportunity to put up a lemonade stand at a middle school baseball game, and they sell some lemonade there, and instead of charging 25 cents, they charge $1 a cup, and they sell lots of lemonade, and so then they do another baseball game, and then they sell some more. And before they know it, this thing starts to grow and snowball, and they've actually got to start making special orders to bring in enough lemons to make their lemonade, and they've got to start keeping track of their expenses on a spreadsheet. And so there comes a point, right, where they've got to make a decision, where this thing is just, it's busy enough and it's going enough that they've got to make a decision. Is this just a hobby or is this a career? Right? Am I trying this out or am I investing my life in this? Am I going to do a weekend lemonade stand or am I going to build a lemonade empire? Right? Is this going to be something I'm trying or is this something I'm investing my life in? And these kind of moments aren't unique to business. I think much more commonly, these kind of decisions or questions about, am I in this to try it out or am I in this for the long haul? Are really important decisions.
DTR. Some of you will recognize what those letters stand for. If you're not sure, let me help you out. If you are a young man in a relationship with a young woman, then chances are these letters are enough to strike fear into your heart. You may run away from, postpone. You may dread the DTR talk. Some young men will even terminate a relationship if they feel like the DTR talk is imminent. It is that official talk that takes place in every romantic relationship. Do you know what it stands for, DTR? Define the relationship. You sit down and you decide where things are going. Have things move from casual to committed? I remember this date I went on in high school. On the very first date, the girl tried to have a DTR talk with me. First date, DTR. I got out of the PDQ. I just ran away.
PDQ, pretty darn quick. So over the next several weeks, I want us together to examine our relationships with Jesus. Now, I get the fact that some of us in this room might be new to the Jesus thing. You might be really at the beginning stages of exploring a relationship with Jesus, for you, it's like a first date, and you're not ready for this talk, and I just encourage you to hang with us and listen and learn and grow. But I think most of us in this room are ready and even need a DTR talk in our relationship with Jesus. Find out where we stand in our walk with Him. To look at Christ's invitation, our theme verse over the next few weeks is going to be Luke 9:23. We're not going to dig into it too deeply this morning, but Luke 9:23 says this: "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." Say that again. If anyone would come after me, says Jesus, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. I think many of us in this room are ready to welcome a DTR, define the relationship talk, because you're ready to move to a different level of commitment. You're ready to move past casual, past what's convenient, and into something that's more committed and devoted in your walk with the Lord. Some of you maybe feel like you're not ready for that because you kind of like the setup you have with Jesus. Kind of like the casual thing where you're kind of dating Jesus, but there's not too much commitment. Kind of like, you know, showing up at church once in a while and gives you something to do on the weekend. Sometimes you even get a free meal. But the thought of taking this to another level, the thought of talking about commitment in your walk with Jesus starts to give you a panic attack. Well, take a deep breath, maybe a few of them, and again, hang with us. Press in, because I believe God wants to take us all to another level in our walk with Him. And here's how we want to start this conversation, is by asking the question, are you a fan or a follower of Jesus? Are you a fan or a follower of Jesus? We might say, what kind of question is that? Aren't we all followers of Jesus? Isn't that why we're here? Well, let's not jump to that answer too quickly. The word fan is defined as an enthusiastic admirer. An enthusiastic admirer. We're all probably fans of something, right? We've probably got a few sports fans in the room. Any Maple Leaf fans? A few. Okay, Montreal Canadiens? Okay, now Ottawa Senators. All right, I'm not alone. There's two others, three others. All right, Ottawa Senators. Anybody else? Anything else? Boston Bruins? Pittsburgh Penguins? You guys are on your own. But we're all Bathurst Teton fans, right? Yeah. No. 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 Come on, guys. So if you're a sports fan, you watch the game. You maybe learn some stats about the team roster and who's on the team and, you know, who's out on injuries. And you may even have a jersey. And, when they win or they get, you know, close to the end of the playoffs, you're excited about that. Excited about that. We understand the concept of fans when it comes to sports. My concern is that our church has the potential, any church has the potential to easily become a stadium of fans of Jesus, and Jesus never really cared about having fans. He never really cared about having fans. If you define a fan as an enthusiastic admirer, then fans were not important to him. I think we come to church, many of us have our own reserved seats, our own box seats, right? Season ticket holders at our own seats. We applaud at certain times and we leave somehow thinking that as fans, it was all for us. We get in the car and we evaluate the sermon and we, thumbs up or thumbs down on the music selection and all that stuff. We know the words to say. We know when we're told to look for a Bible verse, we got our sword drill game on. We can find the Bible verse pretty quick, right? We can feel good about ourselves because we're great admirers of Christ. But he never cared about having fans. So if we're honest with ourselves, if we really want to search ourselves, there's some questions that we want to ask. The first question this morning is, why are you here? Why are you here? Maybe you grew up in this church, or somebody invited you along and it became a habit, and you're just kind of here. You're just not sure what the answer to that question is. You're just here because you always have been. Don't get me wrong, we're glad you're here. But you need to know why you're here. You need to know why you're here. If you read through the Gospels, that Jesus at different points in his ministry would draw a line in the sand and say, are you committed? Will you follow me? Not just will you be a fan, but will you follow me? One of those instances is in John chapter 6. John chapter 6, Jesus is in the height of his ministry, the height of his popularity. He actually has a lot of fans, a lot of admirers. And in John chapter 6, at the first section of that chapter, Jesus is giving a talk and this large crowd gathers. The passage tells us that there are 5,000 men in this crowd, and we know from the other Gospels that talk also about this same story that there wasn't just men, there were some women and children there too. The most conservative estimate would tell us that there were 10,000 people. Barry and Alin just got back from Israel. You guys, yeah, welcome back. You just got back, right? Like yesterday or? Yeah. Thursday? Okay. So, I mean, you guys got to see some of these places, right? It's pretty awesome. Yeah. We look forward to hearing stories about that. But so Jesus was in a place where there were 10,000 people. In the first century, 2,000 years ago, to get a crowd of 10,000 people, that's pretty serious. That's pretty amazing, right? There was a lot. That's like bigger than a stadium, a soccer stadium full today, in comparison. And so Jesus has this crowd of 10,000 people. But in verse 2 of chapter 6, Jesus realizes why they're coming. It says they were coming, quote, because they saw the signs he had performed healing the sick. They came because they saw the signs he performed healing the sick. healing the sick. They liked the show. They liked the flash. They liked what they heard and saw, and so they came as fans of somebody who put on a really good show. And some of us come because we like the music. You know, we like, you know, connecting with some people. Sometimes the pastor preaches a decent message. Right? Whatever. We like the show. Is that why we're here? These people didn't care so much about what Jesus was telling them and what he was calling them to. They just liked the environment. Then Jesus does a miracle in this first part of John chapter 6. He does a miracle and he feeds. He notices that these people are hungry. And he feeds a crowd of 10,000 people from what John says are 5 small loaves of bread and 2 small fish. Now, I'm not sure why John feels the need to explain the smallness of the loaves and the fish, because I don't care how big your loaf of bread is or how big a fish you caught, feeding 10,000 people, it's not going to go far. But John says, no, these were small loaves and small fish, and Jesus breaks them apart, blesses them, and sends them out by his disciples, and he feeds 10,000 people. Amazing. And then a little further down the chapter, in verse 26, Jesus realizes, here's what happens. So Jesus, he leaves, you know, kind of calls the meeting to a close, disperses the crowd. The disciples get in the boat, cross the Sea of Galilee, the lake. Were you guys not amazed at how small the Sea of Galilee is compared to what was in your mind? It's just a small lake, right? And so the disciples get in the boat and they cross the lake, and Jesus walks on the water, does this miracle, and anyways, they end up on the other side of the lake. The crowds want more, and so they go looking for Jesus. The whole crowd travels around the lake to find Jesus again. It's what John tells us in this gospel, in this chapter. They go and find Jesus, and Jesus in verse 26 says, "Very truly I tell you, you are looking for me, not only because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you." So Jesus says, okay, first you were looking for me for the miracles, now you just want to get fed. Now you just like Soup Sunday. Right? We all like Soup Sunday, right? But why are we here? Why are we here, right? Or are we here because we desire and long for a deep relationship with Jesus in our lives? To cultivate that relationship, to grow in it, to take it to another level, and to truly follow him, to truly live in commitment to him and not in a casual friendship or relationship. The passage says that from this time forward, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. Jesus had some strong things to say to the crowd because he didn't care if they were fans or not. He wanted followers. He had some strong things to say, and a whole bunch of people said, "Whoa, that's too intense. We're out of here. And a whole bunch of people left. The goal of this message isn't to get a bunch of you to leave, but it's to get us to consider where we are with Jesus. But Jesus had a whole bunch of people walk away. What's happening? I don't know what's happening. I'm cutting out. A whole bunch of people walk away, and he turns to his closest followers. He turns to the 12. And he says, are you going to leave too? And Peter says, where else would we go? You have the words of life. We have come to believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God. Where else would we go? You have the words of life. We have come to believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God. In other words, Peter's saying, no, Jesus, we are all in. Doesn't matter what it costs. Doesn't matter what anyone else does. Doesn't matter how popular you are or are not. We are in for good. So that leads us to the second question. Are you all in? Are you all in? Being a follower of Jesus requires complete commitment of our lives. A follower of Jesus will do whatever it takes to follow him. They are absolutely, completely sold out and committed to his cause and to who he is. That's what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And on the whole, as human beings, we don't always do so well at absolute commitment. I think we rather prefer selective commitment. We prefer to customize our Christianity. We prefer to say, well, I like this bit, but that bit I don't like so much. So let's tailor this to my needs. Let's take what I want, take what I can get from this. Our consumer society lives for this. Our consumer society says it's all about the customer. And when we come to church, we often think, well, I'm the customer. So it's about what's in it for me, what's good for me. But Jesus doesn't count you as customers. You are a follower or you are not a follower. How many have heard of a dude named Charlemagne? Really? We need more history lessons in this church. Charlemagne was a really important king. He was crowned king on, he was crowned the Holy Roman Emperor in Europe on Christmas Day 800. He was a pretty important dude in history in Europe. He changed the face of Europe. But when Charlemagne became king, he started winning a whole bunch of Franks. Those were Germanic, what we would call Germanic barbarians, Germanic tribes in Europe. He started bringing these Franks into the church so that they could be part of his holy army, if there is such a thing, which I don't think there is. But they could be part of his holy army in the Holy Roman Empire. And so all of these, Franks, these barbarian tribes were coming into the church, they had to be baptized. And as these warriors, as these men are being baptized, there was this custom that happened that they would take their sword out, and as they went down into the water, they held their sword hand above the water so it would remain unbaptized, because they wanted to be free to do with their sword whatever they wanted without it being submitted to Jesus. They understood the importance of baptism. They understood that when you go down in the waters of baptism, you are committing your life to be completely committed to Christ. And they were unwilling to commit their sword hands to Jesus. So in our lives today, what is your sword hand? What would you hold above the water and say, Jesus, you can have all of me but this? Maybe it's that person that you can't forgive. And when Jesus says, if you don't forgive, you will not be forgiven, you say, well, that applies to everyone else, but not to me. I get a pass on this one because you don't know how bad they hurt me. Maybe it's your wallet. There are a lot of unbaptized wallets in the church. People that feel like they're doing God a big favor when they throw a fiver in the offering, rather than saying, Jesus, everything I have is yours, and I'm going to honor you with it. Maybe it's sex. Your mind, your heart, your life in the area of sex. Jesus, you can have everything else, but not my sexuality. You can't tell me what to do with my body. It's mine. I commit everything to you, but don't touch that. Maybe it's a relationship that you know is ungodly, whether it's a friendship or whether it's a romantic relationship or whatever it might be, and you know it's not godly, but you don't understand my loneliness. You don't understand that I need this. So Jesus, give me a pass on this. Folks, the gospel calls us to lay down our lives, to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow him. I know I'm preaching strong this morning, but I'm calling us to step out of fandom and into followership. Because fans will not change the world. Followers will. So in defining our relationship to Jesus, we've asked, why are you here? Are you all in? And thirdly, have you made it your own? This Jesus thing, this relationship with God, this Christianity thing, have you made it your own? Many of us began our faith journey or began our church connection by being invited by somebody or because our parents made us come. We came for someone. We came because it was going to make someone happy that we did. It was going to appease someone that we came to church. And so we showed up. But for those of us who that was our entry point into the church, it's easy to become a fan. It's easy to show up and come for a few months or a few years and you kind of get connected. And it's easy to become a fan through familiarity. When I was a young teenager, probably a preteen actually, grade 7 or 8, I had a friend who was just a crazy fan of the Beatles. And I thought, what is the matter with you? That's old people music. But I would go and hang out at his house, and every time I was there, he'd put on an LP, if you remember those things. He'd put on an LP of the Beatles, and he'd play the music over and over, and before long, I started to get used to it, and I started to like it, and, you know, I became a bit of a fan of the Beatles because I got familiar with it. It's easy to become familiar with something if you hear it. Familiarity. It's easy to become, sometimes we're like that in church. We come to appease someone and then we get familiar with the language and we get familiar with what we're, you know, the say the right words and all that stuff. But at some point we have to move beyond familiarity into followership. See, it's one of the most dangerous places to be connected to Jesus through someone else, to be connected to Jesus casually. Because you've got just enough of Jesus to vaccinate yourself against the real thing. See, here's what they do when they want to vaccinate you for the flu shot or polio or whatever, there's any of that stuff, right? They give you a little bit of the virus, a little bit of the whatever it is, so that your body fights against it and learns to build up antibodies and it becomes immune to the disease. Some of us have just enough of Jesus to be actually immune to our hearts being called to follow Him fully and completely. You have to make your faith your own. Jesus isn't looking for a relationship between you and your mom and Him, or you and your spouse and Him, or you and your friend and Him. He's looking for a relationship with you. He wants your heart. And it is vital that we make our faith our own. So as we walk through this journey over the next few weeks, I'm going to ask the worship team to come on up. As we walk through this journey the next few weeks, we're going to delve into some challenging stuff. We're going to ask some tough questions. I'm excited for the connect groups, because we get to do this not only through the message on Sunday, but there's as you saw at the beginning of the message, the first little clip I showed you, there's some, we get to look at, peer into the life of some people through a, you know, a dramatic film that's kind of cut into episodes, and we get to view into the lives of some people and go with it for a journey with these people for 6 weeks on how they went from being a fan to being a follower, how they were put in situations where they had to make the decision, am I going to make this faith my own, or am I going to continue to slide through on someone else's coattails? So Jesus this morning wants to challenge you. He wants to call to you. He wants to get a hold of your heart and call you into a place where you say, it was a moment I remember, actually it was 2010. It was December 2010. And I was doing a bit of a prayer retreat or a prayer time with Jesus, and I felt like Jesus gave me a picture of me sitting in a wading pool about that deep, just like a little kid splashing my hands in the water. I'm like, what is that? That is silly. That's foolish. Why are you giving me a picture of me sitting in a wading pool splashing my hands? And I felt Jesus speak into my heart and say, you spent too long in the wading pool. I want to call you into the deep end. I want to call you into a place of deeper commitment and a deeper walk with me. Get out of the wading pool. And I feel like that's what Jesus is saying to us this morning. And as we launch into this Not a Fan series, He's calling us out of the wading pool, and He's calling us into a place where we can go deep with Him. But it's not a decision I can make for you as your pastor. It's not a decision the person sitting beside you can make for you. It is a decision for only you. So Jesus, we're here this morning. So challenged in our hearts. Challenged by your call to us that says, will you be a follower? Will you follow me? God, all the excuses that come up in our hearts, all the things we want to customize our Christianity, all the ways we want to limit your lordship in our lives. God, when we come face to face with you, they will mean nothing. So today, let us hear your call in our hearts to move beyond fanship and into followership. Thank you, Jesus. Would you stand, please?